Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, 1 hour from now. Where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. A little over an hour from now, Devontae Adams, superstar wide receiver. He is an all-timer for the Green Bay Packers, stops by. Joy Taylor's out today, and Alex Curry stepping in again after a wild Angel-Dodger weekend series in which the Angels got the better of the Dodgers these days. Who doesn't?
I think everyone does, but I mean, it's not often you see 36 runs in two games. It was wild. It was a wild first two games and then an easy 2-1 win yesterday.
Big fight in the stands on Friday.
Oh, there. That was not the only fight. There was a fight at our pre- and post-game set behind me after the game. Oh, I mean, boy. You say one thing, those fans are going at it.
Well, let's start here on a Monday. So yesterday afternoon on Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day to everybody out there, I made it a point. I wanted to watch the Knicks versus the Clippers. And I've said this before. You know, most NBA regular season games, most Major League Baseball regular season games, most NHL regular season games, they don't matter a ton, but you do get the occasional late season series or late season game that matters. And there's a handful of NBA regular season games that I'll, you know, circle and go, I want to watch that one. And this was an interesting one. The New York Knicks, kind of a directionless mess forever, have a basketball team everybody now likes. It's a band of overachievers. And that they were on a West Coast road swing, fifth West Coast game. So they're kind of weary and tired. And you had the well-rested Clippers. Everybody was playing that mattered. Kawhi and Paul George, they had 2 days off. So my feeling was going into the game is, you're going to have a Clippers team rested with a bunch of energy, national TV game. But I think, you know, the Knicks will fight for a while, but they're tired. Nope, that's not what happened. Nope, the Knicks fell behind 10-1. Were often behind and just kept fighting and fighting and outworked and outplayed and outdefended the Clippers in Los Angeles and won. And Julius Randle didn't play particularly great. This was about Reggie Bullock. This was about defense. This was about Derrick Rose. And I got to tell you, two things jumped out to me. First time in 25 years, the Knicks have a future because they have a direction. Okay, it's not just, hey, we got a bunch of cap space. Hey, we're going to land this glamorous free agent. Yeah, that never happens. This is actually a real team, a band of overachievers. They play real defense. They play really hard. There's about seven guys that can give them somewhere between 12 and 18 points a night. They have an excellent head coach. And that's the second thing, is that they are not a championship team this year and maybe not next year. They're not. Expectations. Be realistic. This is what hurts organizations that aren't winning for a long time, they get unrealistic. Cleveland Brown fans are like, Super Bowl or bust. Cleveland's probably not going to win a Super Bowl. In fact, I'm going to go with they're not. But they're a playoff team. They can win playoff games. The Knicks are a playoff team. They can win a playoff series. But they don't have enough offense on a nightly basis to be a championship team. Also, one of the great advantages of the Knicks is they play their ass off. They play hard. That wins a lot of games in the regular season. But everybody in the playoff plays hard. And so that equals out, and you need talent. Brooklyn's going to play hard in the playoffs. Lakers going to play hard in the playoffs. These star-studded teams, they take nights off. They're not energized. I mean, they call Rajon Rondo playoff Rondo. He plays hard when the lights are on. But it doesn't matter to me because the Knicks now have a direction. It's so much easier in life to get somewhere when you actually point to something and you're going somewhere. And it's not just that the Knicks have been bad. They've never stood for anything in recent years. What are they? They're not good at really anything in particular. What is the foundation of the house? What is it? The Knicks have it. Play real defense. They're very coachable. You get maximum effort every night. That is not a championship team, but it's a 45-win team in the regular season, and that in the East can get you a 4 or 5 seed. And they are absolutely good enough to win a playoff series. They just lack offensive firepower. But, you know, it's funny. For all the glamour and the wealth and the stars of New York. If you really go back to the history of New York Knicks basketball, and when I was a kid, the first time I started watching sports was like 1971, 1972. The two championships for the Knicks came in 1970 and 73, both against the Lakers with Jerry West. The Lakers were known as flashy and offensive. The Knicks were all about defense. Walt Frazier, still a broadcaster, was a seven-time All-NBA defender. They were about defense. And everybody always thinks New York is flashy. That's not about it. That's not what it's about. Even Syracuse basketball, the most popular college team in New York now, is about that zone defense that Boeheim plays. New Yorkers like their teams tough. The New York Giants Super Bowls have really never been about offense. They've been about defense. Joe Namath is one of the only, like, offensive-driven New York championship teams. And when you really look, I mean, Mariano Rivera, the closer. They don't win any of those World Series under Torrey without Mariano Rivera, the closer. And so New York's all flashy, but the Knicks won with defense over the flashier Lakers. Pat Riley's teams were all about defense, and this team is all about defense and effort. It just fits New York. I've said this before. It's not a coincidence that every great Laker team starts with offense. Wilt, Jerry West, Gail Goodrich, those teams won like 33 straight in the 70s at one point. Magic and Kareem, Shaq and Kobe. That's really what they're about. Last year was weird. It was kind of about defense and AD and Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee and size. It was such a weird Laker championship. But again, it was a pandemic year. It was a weird year. The Detroit Pistons, every time they've won, it's been about defense. You kind of mirror your city. And if you go back and look at Knicks basketball, it's always been defense and tough and effort and Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley and Walt Frazier. And that's what this team is. They're not that gifted. Derrick Rose is kind of reinventing himself. He played great yesterday. Julius Randle is a max effort guy, not flashy, shoots threes better than he used to, but in a mathematical driven league now where threes beat twos, Lakers bailed on him. Knicks said, okay, what else? We're not landing the stars we want. He's been great. They have RJ Barrett. Reggie Bullock's a defender who plays hard. This is a classic Knicks team. They stand for something. They are something. They're good at something. What a joy to watch them play. Not a championship team. Don't go nuts. Don't reach and overpay Randall. Don't reach for an injury-riddled star. That's not what you are. You're not Brooklyn offensively. You're not. That's not what you are. Don't get silly. Don't be the Browns. Don't make a big reach and overpay. Your foundation is excellent. You play defense. You're well coached. You play hard. You're overachievers. And that has, frankly, in New York, been the recipe for winning championships. It's Willis Reed hobbling on the court. It's the Knicks tackling Michael Jordan. It's a fun watch. They're not pretty. They're not glamorous. They're not that vertical, but it's a great watch. All right, I saw this yesterday. The Cleveland Browns will not be trying to trade for Aaron Rodgers. We love Baker. Okay, whether or not I agree with that, there is a point here. Is that Aaron Rodgers, as great as he is not for everybody. And he's not. And that's important to think about. I don't think he fits with the culture of the Colts. It's very much a team. I think he would actually be a step back for Andy Reid. I think Mahomes is more coachable. There's this thing about Aaron Rodgers. It's always been the stat that all the cheese hats can't really argue with. Aaron's a Baylor. He's not a foxhole guy. He's just gifted. One of the things about Russell Wilson and Tom Brady, they're optimistic to the point of being corny. Tom Brady trails the Super Bowl 28-3 and wins. He trails that Seahawk team by 10 in the fourth quarter and wins. Tom Brady has 39 fourth quarter comeback wins in his career. And what makes that number amazing is how often did he even trail in the fourth quarter? They average 12, 13 games a year. Aaron has 17 fourth quarter wins. Oh, Colin, that's because they don't trail much. Either does Russell Wilson. and he's got 35% more than Aaron. Joe Flacco has more than Aaron. Andy Dalton has more than Aaron. Derek Carr has more than Aaron. Matt Stafford has more than Aaron. Matt Ryan has more than Aaron. Aaron is not a foxhole guy. He sours very quickly. One of the amazing things about being sort of optimistic, and it's funny. My ex-wife's very optimistic. And sometimes my daughter will go, you know, some mom is sometimes too optimistic. And I always say, as opposed to what? Cynical? Optimism over time wears better than cynical. And Brady and Russell Wilson border on corny. But last year, Tampa Bay lost 38-3 in week 9. That season could have been over. But it isn't with Tom, pom-pom Tommy, rah-rah Tommy, sun at the end of the tunnel Tommy. That's one of the great assets of Brady. It's not the biggest, not the strongest, not the fastest. He's got a will and a belief we'll get through it. It's also what makes Russell Wilson unique. And some of his teammates roll their eyes at him. That's not who Aaron is. Good God, you think Aaron in Green Bay is a weird fit. You think he gets frustrated with Green Bay. Cleveland, the first sign of dysfunction, he would be eye-rolling through the tunnel, is that Aaron is great, but he's not for everybody. You need stability. You need smart people. He sours on things quickly. And Baker Mayfield, for all my misgivings about him, right now, he's a good fit. He fits Cleveland. Overlooked, often mocked, a little small, not the most gifted, but a gamer, got some fight. You can back him into a corner. He'll come out swinging. That's kind of what Cleveland needs now. Aaron Rodgers is not for everybody.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Denver remains the number one landing spot for Aaron Rodgers. One of the things to remember is Denver right now has the second most cap space in the NFL. So that's a real thing. You know, there's very few hopeless teams in the NFL. And by hopeless, I mean no shot at a playoffs. And a really, really low ceiling at best. Denver is one of those teams. I think there's five in the NFL that there's no chance of a playoff spot. The New York Jets, rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, worst roster easily in their division. Philadelphia Eagles, really question marks at coach, question marks at quarterback. And I think they're rebuilding much more than they'd like to admit. The Houston Texans, dysfunction everywhere. Detroit Lions, they've done a good job in the offseason to upgrade their offensive line. It may be the strength of the team, but they got a new coach, a new quarterback, learning a new system. They're just not really good. And then there's the Denver Broncos. And four out of those five teams don't have a good enough roster, or just have rookie this or rookie that, or they're just swimming in chaos. That is not the issue in Denver. Their roster's good enough to make the playoffs. It is. And their coach is, on the defensive side, strongly respected. And it's not an organization that really swims in chaos. It's just not. It's generally been the Steelers with a mountain range. I mean, Denver's well-run historically. John Elway struggled at GM, but they're well-run. To me, it's May. It's early. It's May. You got time and you got cap space. Go for it. Denver had two big issues this offseason. Secondary, awful, and quarterback, question marks. Well, they've answered the secondary. Nobody in the NFL did a better job than to solve their secondary issue than Denver, except Cleveland. Cleveland did the best job, but they went and got in Denver Patrick Surtain, great corner, number one rated corner, number one or two at Alabama, and Kyle Fuller, a very high-end corner from Chicago. Still can't figure out why Chicago couldn't make that work on the books. So they're not going to be a good team at corner. Their only other question was quarterback. They got cap space. They have time. They have a good enough roster. As Jay Glazer says, when you're driving to your facility and you know you're not a playoff team, GMing and coaching in the NFL, it's a miserable, miserable experience. And I contend Denver, and Aaron doesn't fit everywhere. He would work here. He's got respect for Elway. Peyton Manning had that. I mean, Elway cut Peyton Manning's salary. Peyton Manning didn't like about it, but he didn't criticize it publicly because Elway's an all-timer. And Elway is better than Aaron Rodgers all-time in, you know, the history of football, and Aaron knows it. And because Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, Aaron knows that. Aaron would have to be on his best behavior for Aaron. And I think he could be. 2 or 3 years, give it a run. But this one works to me on so many fronts. This is not a chaotic organization. It's a good enough roster, and their only weakness is quarterback.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Clippers are awful late in games. They're terrible. Paul George can get tentative. You know, they don't have, you know, outside of Kawhi, another score after Paul George you can depend on for 25 a night. But if you look at their late game clutch statistics, and I'll put them on the screen here for our FS1 viewers, there are five teams in the NBA who are terrible in something called clutch points. That's the last 5 minutes of a game with a point differential of five or less. Four of the teams have no talent. The Cavs, the Magic, the Thunder, and the Rockets. Then there's a team with a bunch of talent, the Clippers, that's second worst in the league. What the hell's going on? It's not that hard to figure out. This is the issue when Kawhi and Leonard's your star. He doesn't talk. He's odd. He's nonverbal. By the way, who is second best in the NBA in clutch points? The Suns, because Chris Paul talks and yells and coaches and barks and screams. I never bought into this, you know, leadership is, walk softly, carry a big stick. You got to talk. That's why the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are in trouble. Talk. That's leadership is talking and communicating, not being a big, strong guy who's silent. When Kawhi is your star, you're bad if he's the culture setter. You're bad late in game. This is 2 years now. It's been a problem. How in God's name are they the second worst team in clutch points? Ty Lue's won a title. It's not him. They've got talent. The other four teams around them in the NBA stats are bad. This is Kawhi. You say, well, what about San Antonio and Toronto? Those cultures were set. He was icing on a very formidable cake. He is the cake with the Clippers, and he doesn't talk. He's nonverbal. He doesn't distribute. When you want, you got to give this team to Rondo with 5 minutes left. Paul George, very talented, but his history is he gets very tentative and tight late. Kawhi can drop a bucket. Forget him leading. Just have him be what he is, a shot maker. That's what he is. But you look at the Clippers. They have top eight in the NBA bench scoring. Excellent bench. They've got a coach that's won a title. They have two stars. They've got a 3-and-D guy, Nicholas Batum. That's a championship team. They are ready to win. Microwave and win. And they're awful at the end of games. It makes no sense until you think of, well, who's running the team? By the way, the Suns are suddenly great at clutch scoring. Chris Paul's verbal. LeBron's teams have generally been good late. He's verbal. He's a coach on the floor. The Warrior teams have generally been very good late. Why? Steph Curry is verbal. It's not complicated stuff. Is that you cannot have this roster and be this bad late in games. You got to hand it over to Rondo. Let him do what he does. They call him Playoff Rondo for a reason. Last year, he was great for the Lakers in big spots. And he wasn't a necessity for the Lakers. He was an additive, a bonus, because with LeBron, you had the leadership. But this is kind of what you get when your culture is set with Kawhi Leonard. And last year, what was the big issue with the Clippers? I got fooled on it. Chemistry. Again, chemistry is not a problem when your leader is a communicator. Chemistry is a problem when your general manager in Green Bay won't talk to your prickly quarterback. Then it's a problem. So watching the Clippers yesterday, I'm like, this roster's way too good to be this bad at the end of basketball games. It makes no sense. They are just easily disrupted. Now, again, the Knicks deserve credit. Knicks play real defense. Thibodeau's a great defensive coach. But if you look at the Knicks' talent, Julius Randle's a B-plus player having an A-plus year. Derrick Rose is not a vertical finisher like he used to be. He's a good off-the-bench guy. Reggie Bullock. I mean, when you really watch, this is a prime example when you watch these highlights. They just don't really have an identity late in games. Why would they? Why would they have an identity? That's not what, by the way, last year, if you look up reports, the biggest complaint was, well, Kawhi is getting special treatment and Paul George was getting special treatment. Again, that doesn't happen if guys talk. And you can't blame coaches. At some point, this has always been a players' league. Players have the power. The NFL is not a players' league. NBA is. So that means you make the money, coaches get fired, not stars. But then when you're bad late in games, it falls on the player, not the coach. I'm tired of the coach getting whacked in the NBA. It's a players' league. You get the plaudits when you win late. You get the criticism when you lose late. This is not a Brad Stevens issue in Boston. They don't have enough juice. This is not a Ty Lue problem.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Colin right, Colin wrong.
Where Colin was right?
I've acknowledged for years, 10 years, Aaron Rodgers is great, but he's really petty and hard to get along with. Well, story came out this weekend from a former teammate and executive that said Aaron's an intelligent, trolling, petting mother blanker. He's going to make you look stupid for disrespecting him. Said another, why are you getting blindsided? I'm not saying Aaron's evil, but this is like his criminal mastermind plan. Said an executive, put it this way, they'd have to fire everybody. He's dug in, that's who he is. They'd have to make him the freaking owner of the team. That's the sense I get. He just wants control. Again, these are people who have worked with him and been with him and been teammates with him. Aaron is difficult and prickly and condescending. And when I write my last and third book, I'll write an Aaron Rodgers story that I've never told. He's a lot to deal with. That's all I've ever said, and get remarkable pushback when I started 10 years ago saying it. For the record, I get a lot less now.
Where Colin was wrong.
I always said the second chapter, if you write the book on LeBron, is durability. The first chapter, he's amazing. Now he's not very durable. 3 injuries in 2 years. He came back last week. High ankle sprain was the injury. He re-injured it almost immediately. The Lakers have sort of devolved into a play-in game team to make the playoffs. LeBron's had, to me, kind of a bitter year where he usually gets 120 days off after a title or a championship run. This year he got 70. He was anti-All-Star game, anti-play-in game, anti-starting the season in December. And let's just be honest now. Not only have we seen the best of LeBron, we've probably seen the last of him playing engaged for a full regular season.
Where Colin was right.
Never understood the disrespect for Steph Curry. Maybe it's the nerdy shoes he wears, or he doesn't have the alpha players want, but he scored 49 points in 3 quarters Saturday. He's going to win the scoring championship. And oh, by the way, he is single-handedly putting in an odd-fitting Warriors team in the playoffs. They're currently the 8th seed. He is shooting since the All-Star break 46% on threes and getting 37 points a game. By the way, KD left him. KD can't stay healthy and is not even the most valuable Brooklyn Net. This is what Curry is all about. The great players in this league can lead through dysfunction, through chaos. It's what LeBron's done in Cleveland a couple of times. It's what LeBron did when he came to the Lakers. There are a lot of great players in this league. There are only 2 or 3 that are in Steph Curry's class in terms of valuable.
Where Colin
was wrong.
Yeah, I started the year saying the Dodgers had the chance to be the best team since maybe the late 90s Yankees. They started 13-3. They're now in third place in the National League West. They got beat by the Angels this weekend. At one point led 14-0 and almost blew the lead. Dave Roberts has to at some point be on the hot seat before the All-Star game. Injuries are piling up. Cody Bellinger's not there yet, and Dustin May is now out. The bullpen is a real concern. They regularly leak runs late in games. Not a good weekend. The Freeway Series didn't treat them well. Angels won two of those.
Where Colin was right?
Nothing against Kirk Cousins, but any time you throw a little shade at the Vikings quarterback, their fans go nuts. Story came out this week. They were fishing for a quarterback and strongly considered drafting Justin Fields when he dropped. It's nothing against Kirk Cousins, but he has an incredibly low ceiling. He's 7-16 in primetime games, and in a division with Aaron Rodgers, he just doesn't get you to the next level. There's a reason Stephon Diggs was constantly complaining. But man, there is no fan base that gets more sensitive when you criticize their quarterback. He's very much Derek Carr, but in my opinion, not as mobile. Therefore, he's got a low ceiling. The Vikings, acknowledging it, were about ready to draft Justin Fields.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, I ripped him last week. I got to be fair about this. Anthony Davis dominated the Suns this weekend in a very important game for the Lakers and scored 42 points. What do you know? He delivered in one of their biggest games of the year. Listen, it's never been about talent for Anthony Davis. It has always been about desire. That's why he reminds me so much of Rasheed Wallace, a great defensive player from a Carolina, Kentucky-like program. Hard to stop, elite defender. You have to beg to get into the weight room and work on his body. That's why his body never treats him well. But big game in Portland, played pretty well. Big game against the Suns. He absolutely dominated it, and he deserves that credit.
Where Colin was right?
Well, very early, even when they were 0-7, we kept saying with the Miami Dolphins, I love the coach, and I like the direction of this team. Peter King, in his column this morning, Football Morning in America, talked about Chris Greer, 28 trades in 28 months on the job. This is why I like this team. And Greer had a great quote. Football has evolved. A lot of general managers are willing to trade now. All we think is about getting better tomorrow. This is a Miami team that everybody seems to like now, but we said it when they started 0-7. Look at their off seasons. Look at their drafts. Really smart. And Chris Greer is one of these GMs who keeps a very low profile. You don't hear him talk. There are no press conferences. He is really one of the sharp cats in the NFL.
Where Colin was right?
Bradley Beal. How long have I been saying Bradley Beal's the best player with no marquee value in this league? He's got to go to a winner. Well, he's one of the favorite, my guys, right, favorite. He is now. The Wizards are the hottest team in the league in the last month. In the last 2 weeks, he's had three games over 40 points. He's going to finish number two in the NBA in scoring. He had 50 points Saturday. It's a bad franchise, but I'll tell you this. Everybody at some point has struggled to play with Westbrook because Russell kind of has a distinct style. What do you know? Bradley Beal, with a past his prime Westbrook, over the course of the season, is able to play very well with Westbrook in the same backcourt. It's not like he's a forward. They're in the same backcourt. They're playing very well together. And Beal remains the best player in the NBA that you've probably never watched an entire game of. And I'd love to see him in the playoffs. I know LeBron's camp, huge fans, huge fans of Bradley Beal. They just can't make it work because he's expensive and the Lakers don't have cap space.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Listen, there's three receivers in the NFL to me that are just different than everybody else. In no particular order, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, and our next guest joining us live, Davante Adams. 8 years, four Pro Bowls, first player in NFL history with 100 catches and 18 touchdowns in one season, and just a remarkable player. So the obvious question when I saw you were booked today, just when you heard the Aaron Rodgers stuff, what was your first reaction? What was like the first minute you thought blank? What did you think?
Well, when I first got it, I was actually on the golf course trying to enjoy myself. A couple of brewskis out there, so it's a good day. And then I hear that, and it kind of sways it. Obviously, I don't really know what to think. Hadn't really spoke to him, so it wasn't the best news to receive while I'm out there trying to have a good time. But it scared me a little bit. But it was a lot of things that go into this. So I was like, let's just calm down. Let's see what's going on. We'll talk to him, and then ultimately try to figure out what's going on with this thing.
You know, Davante, you're a free agent at the end of next year, so you're very, very fortunate that if the Aaron Green Bay thing did not work, you would be on the market, and I'm going to guess you're going to get whatever you want. You're going to get a Stephon Diggs deal. So let's be honest here. This is not a shot at Jordan Love, but if Aaron moved on, you have such an incredible working relationship with him. Would it affect your future in Green Bay?
Potentially. I mean, that's my guy. That's the only guy that I've had, other than that 2017 season when he got hurt. It's the only guy that I played with. And, we built up a special connection over the years that has made it, put us both in really good positions in our career. Not that he needed me to come along for it because he was already in that spot, but we established a lot together. So it would change a lot, man. Doesn't mean potentially I'd be gone, but I'd definitely have to do some extra thinking if my guy wasn't here.
Well, first of all, you have the most catches in a single season in Packer history, which is kind of remarkable considering how many great players they've had. All the stats that mattered last year, you were number one in all of them. Here's the thing is that Aaron needs to trust a receiver to throw to him. That's why it can be tough for like Tom Brady rookie receivers. He's hard on him. Aaron rookie receivers, he's hard on him. You built a trust with him. Take me back to your first year or two. When do you think, Davante, you crossed that threshold where Aaron finally said, I trust this kid?
It took time, man. I'm not going to lie. It took time before I can, honestly, personally say, we're in that spot and he trusts me for sure. There's been times, throughout my first year, he came to me some critical moments in playoff game against Dallas. But that we hadn't really developed that true trust at that point. So I wasn't really sold that, we have like this crazy bond that's going to turn into something undeniably special. So I would say obviously 2015 was not a great year for me at all. So definitely wasn't that. I'll say around 2016, middle of that season, we were having a lot of success scoring a bunch of touchdowns. I was healthy that year, so I was able to get through it and really just play my game. And, being hurt, banged up in 2015, just the type of player I am and the type of movements that I make. You can't have any, nagging injuries going on with your limbs and ankles and all of that stuff. So being able to be healthy in 2016, I felt like we were able to establish something and kind of snowball that moving forward and missed him in 17 when he got hurt. But we got right back to it in 2018 and kind of since then just been tearing it up.
It's very rare. Edelman and Brady had this. Doug Baldwin and Russell Wilson had this. There's almost nonverbal stuff. When I watch you and Aaron play, it's like you're playing a little game by yourself that you haven't let all your teammates in on. I feel like, and by the way, Aaron doesn't get along with everybody, and that's fine. But there's something about what you've done that has created this relationship. And kind of talk about that it is special and not he hasn't had this with every wide receiver.
I think it's just years and years of just building that connection and the consistency, honestly. I think just him being able to trust that I know what I'm doing. And, he got this thing where I've referred to him as an elephant before. He remembers everything. So I try to basically hop onto that train and be that same type of player. Where he'll bring up something, he'll tell me in a huddle. You remember, against the Titans 2016, you ran, outside release, this or that route, and I need you to run it like that. So then I would line up there, and he'll kind of give me a look later in the game, and I'll look over to him and know exactly what he's trying to get me to do. And then, you know, coming out, and there's nothing more gratifying than you know, connecting on that type of level or knowing what your quarterback is expecting of you, doing just that, turn around, seeing a ball, and catching a touchdown. I feel like that's what's allowed us to be different than any other group, being able to do stuff like that.
Listen, the Packers are a big brand. They're a notable franchise, but they're, Devontae, they're different. They don't have an owner. It is not only the smallest NFL city, it's the smallest NFL city, it's the smallest pro city. It's a very, there's a very unique bonding experience in Green Bay. It's not a criticism. Right. One of Aaron's criticisms of the franchise, they haven't communicated all the time, and in fairness, he's right. Yeah. When Aaron complains about that, do you defend him on that? Do you see that sometimes?
I defend my guys on everything, man. I mean, this is we all know it's a pretty dense business. There's a lot that happens, a lot that goes on here. You know, just like any other job, you want to be happy, and you want guys, once you have gained that respect, you want to be treated with that type of respect. So there's certain things that, you know, I can't speak on specifics, but there's certain things that he wants, and maybe the club wasn't so excited about living up to right away. And, you know, that can affect a guy who's done so much for an organization. You know, he's put his body and his really laid his life on the line out there for that team, for his teammates and everything. So I've been behind him 100% throughout the whole thing. Obviously, I'm praying everything works out and that we get him back, and you know, we can continue to go out there and do stuff like what you see on the screen there, because it's a lot of fun doing that.
By the way, finally, because of the pandemic, Devontae, we have not in the media, we haven't seen Jordan Love practice. We haven't seen him play. There was no preseason. Right. We're all just guessing here. So I'm not expecting him to be Aaron Rodgers. That's unfair. I never expected a Brady backup to be Brady or a Russell Wilson backup to be Russell. But if I asked you, how far do you believe, if Aaron left, how far is Jordan Love from starting in the league? Another offseason, another year. Could you give me some sense, like, if the worst thing happened and Aaron left, a worst thing for you, how far is Jordan from playing? Is he close?
I'd say, and here's, it's pretty tough. And like you just stated, not having any real action out there, it's tough for me to assess that fully. Based off what I've seen, he works really hard. He's really attentive. And, you know, he's like a sponge with Aaron in that room, just soaking up everything, all the knowledge, you know, different things. And with his mechanics, I know, you know, he's been working on to try to get better and better at. But it's tough because I haven't seen him play, haven't seen him get out there and do a preseason. So after this year, I think we'll be able to give a more accurate assessment of that, seeing him going against a few other teams, maybe some cross, you know, how they do the training camp practices. Maybe we'll do some stuff like that potentially. So we'll see. You know, I definitely got faith in him that he can get it done. And, you know, whoever's out there, I showed it with, 2017 with Brett Hundley. I'm going to get out there and be ready to ball regardless, you know, control what I can control. But like I said, Love is, he's been looking good from what I've seen, but that real live action is what will really let us know.
Well, by the way, if you quit today, you get Hall of Fame votes. You are a spectacular talent. Congratulations on that. You've got something called Optimum Nutrition Building Better Lives. What is that?
Yeah, man. I partnered with Optimum Nutrition. You know, the best in the business. They've done so much for me, my family, the communities that I grew up in. Just putting people in a better position to be able to maximize their potential. And I feel like that's, you know, having a sponsor like that you can trust when it comes to training, especially at the level that we are at. I feel like it's incredibly, incredibly important to be able to trust that and know that I'm going to be getting the best out of, you know, better workouts, better recovery, all this stuff that allowed me to be in my peak performance.
Devontae, you're a spectacular talent. It's great to finally meet you. By the way, have you talked to Aaron at all in the last couple weeks at all? Texted him anything?
Yeah, we talked a little bit. It's been, you know, a lot is still being, you know, figured out on his end. So it's tough for me to get into specifics and speak on it. Honestly, I would love to. Can't wait till I can just get on here and tell you that he's back and we're back doing our thing that we've been doing. But for now, it's just, you know, you got to iron out a few things and then You know, hopefully I'll be back on the show. We'll be celebrating, taking shots and whatnot.
Well, I hope you're optimistic today. Devontae, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it, man. You're a stud, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, boss. I appreciate you.